Well, before you go to bed, we're going to talk about dreams. Up next, Dr. Jillian Holloway on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Jillian Holloway is an internationally recognized expert in the field of dream analysis. She teaches courses on dream psychology and intuition research at Merrill Hurst University near Portland, Oregon. Her approach to dream interpretation is based on a 20-year collection of more than 30,000 dream cases, and she has a straightforward approach, cutting to the useful gift in any dream. Here she is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Jillian, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine, George. It's nice to speak with you.
You too. 30,000 dream cases. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. And I'm really interested in what's going on when a person has a particular kind of dream. It's amazing how often the situations are similar, just as the dreams are similar.
Let's talk a little bit about these kinds of dreams of after-death communications. A lot of people call this program, and they hear voices in their dream state. What's going on with them?
Well, I do think that some dreams that we have that deal with the deceased are, in fact, what the Guggenheims coined the term after-death communications. Some people also call them visitation dreams, where someone from the other side is actually able to communicate with us, because in the dream state, we are so much more accessible to telepathic input. And I've been collecting these cases since 2006, mainly, and finding that they are very much more common than I'd anticipated. I expected that people who are interested in psychology or in the paranormal would be inclined to this type of experience, but what I'm finding is that it is universal. It's really across the board. People of all faiths, all ages, both men and women, people who are believers and who are non-believers, who frankly say, I don't believe in an afterlife, but look, this is what's happened, and I have remembered it throughout my life. It's that memorable. So I think this is a universal phenomenon, and we're just beginning to get enough data to begin to explore the similarities and how it works.
Now, is it the person who is sensitive, the dreamer, or is it the person who is entering their dream state?
Well, I think it's both. I get a lot of reports from people who are not particularly close to the person who has passed, maybe an uncle or a peripheral relative. In some cases, even a neighbor will have a dream in which the deceased comes to them and says, look, I need you to talk to my wife, Gladys. I've been trying and trying and trying to get through to her in a dream. I just can't make the connection. It's almost like the person on the other side is dialing a phone and the number won't get through to the person they want to get a message to. So they go to a person who has a more accessible wavelength in their sleep to try and get a message through to them to convey to the person that they want to get through to.
How do you interpret a dream?
Well, I look at most dreams are symbolic, and I look at the action in the dream. Rather than a particular symbol, like what does it mean if you dream of a car or keys or a rainbow, that will get you somewhere. But if you really look at the action of the dream, that's like the spine of the whole story, and that's usually what you can rely upon, and it will take you forward. If you're fighting a life and death battle, trying to keep your head above water, if you are grabbing the controls of the plane because the pilot's gone and you're the only one who can fly it, the action will take you into the sort of allegory that the dream is relating that has something to do with your life.
When people, Jillian, have nightmares, does that mean that there's something wrong in their dream state, something wrong in their life? Or does it mean that they had a pizza before they went to bed?
Absolutely can relate to something that you have eaten or consumed, a lot of over-the-counter drugs, for example, we're sensitive to and don't realize it, and that can affect the dream state. But I would argue that the specific thing that you dream about has everything to do with what's going on in your life. For example, on a really hot August night, a married couple will both have dreams in which something is hot and it's going on. The woman may be burning the dinner, and the man may be having a night as a firefighter, but the themes of their dreams have to do with their personalities, their stressors, and their things that they're going after in life, although the heat is the outside element that's influencing and catalyzing the theme, if you will.
Now, how can you tell if your dream is precognitive? What are the signs there?
Precognitive dreams, it's fascinating.
You have
hear a lot of reports of them, and they have about 8 elements that seem to be in common. They often have an unusual light. They're either misty looking or they're ultra light, or there's almost like those scenes in the biblical movies where the sky opens up and there's a particular light that shines through. There's also a sense of hyper-reality to precognitive dreams. People say they are more real than real life, so they don't seem dreamlike. Often there's a sense that the color is altered. People report that it's silvery or has an almost metallic quality, like an old film, bad film, or that there is an amplification of color in the dream, that it's hyperluminous. Also, a lot of times there's a sense that you know you're dreaming. You may not be completely lucid. You can't take control of the action, but you know that you're in a dream state. A lot of people tell me that who have frequent paranormal dreams tell me that if there is a narrator, almost like a voiceover in a movie, they know that that is a precognitive dream and that they can rely on part of it coming true.
Take us through one of your courses, for example, in dream psychology. What do you do?
We look at the state of how people are working with dreams today in clinical situations, and also how just everybody is working with their dreams more now and taking them seriously. That's really the exciting part of dream studies, I believe, is that everybody is now able to say, look, I had this dream. I know it's connected. Let me look at the elements as if it was a story. And I think that's really the crux where we're getting some traction now, because so many people are finding dreams useful. So that's what I focus on in my classes.
It's so amazing, though, that people are able to tap into their dream state and accomplish some of their goals and get things done in their day-to-day life.
Amazing, because dreams have that. They're at the crossroads of creativity, of spirituality, of that deeper intuition where you're trying to take care of yourself and your family. One woman had chronic knee trouble, and her doctor said, there's nothing really wrong, there's nothing we can do. And she had a dream that she had someone stick a needle deep into the center of her knee to touch that achy, achy point where nothing could relieve the pain. And she woke up and thought, why don't I try acupuncture? I've never thought of that. She went in, and that turned out to be the treatment that did the trick for that chronic pain for her. She never would have thought of that in a million years, she said.
Tell me about this dreaming research project.
Well, I'm collecting these after-death communication dreams from English-speaking people all over the world. I've been doing this for several years, and I have many, many hundreds of stories from them. And I'm really interested in the type of people who are having these dreams and what they feel afterwards. A lot of people mention a hug or a touch during the dream, and that there is almost an infusion of love that they can feel. It's almost akin to a mystical experience. If they hug their loved one in the dream, they wake up and they feel physically full of that love afterwards. And so I'm interested in these qualities and characteristics because they are so utterly different from a regular dream.
More. Give me more. What do you mean?
Well, often there's a conversation involved. Normal dreams, and I've looked at tens of thousands of dreams. Anybody who remembers their dreams knows that there's action, something going on. But in these after-death communications, there's usually just a one-on-one conversation. Often somebody comes into the bedroom, may even sit down on the bed and talk to you, but nothing else happens. That's unusual. Also, the fact that the person knows that the individual is dead, they'll say, Mom, you're dead. What's going on? And the other person will say, yeah, I know I'm dead, and I know you're dreaming, but I can visit you this way. Time after time, I get reports that people say, how can you be doing this? Am I dreaming? Is this real? And the deceased person says, yes, you're dreaming, and yes, this is real. So we have to expand our idea of a dream to include a very real experience, even though it is happening technically in the dream state.
Do you find that the visitation in the dream state has people visit them in their real life state?
That is something that totally surprised me. But yes, I call that the cluster effect. What happens often is that we are so accessible to telepathy in our dreams, that often that's the easiest way. It's almost like a broadband link. That's the easiest way for the person from the other side to make a communication. You have this dream communication experience, and then after that, there'll be a whole series of coincidences, little signs. You'll hear a song in the elevator, and that was your dad's favorite song. There'll be these little link-ups that happen in waking life that tend to corroborate subjectively your sense of belief in the experience you had in the dream.
Why do some people have these kinds of dreams and others don't?
I think it has to do with the sensitivity of the dreamer. Just as some people are inclined to all kinds of intuitive and psychic experiences, and for others of us, it's a rare experience. Some people have a lot of paranormal dreams, and it's just easier to get through to them somehow. And a number of people report, as I mentioned, that they'll get a communication from someone from the other side who is frustrated in trying to get through to a loved one and says, look, will you talk to my wife for me? You have to promise to tell them. In fact, that's what got me started in this research. I had a young friend who committed suicide, and he came to me in a dream. He interrupted a dream. He barged in, scared me to death, and said, I want you to talk to my best friend, Sarah, and tell her that I'm okay. I've been trying to talk to her, to tell her, because everyone was upset, of course, because he had committed suicide. And I thought, oh, when I woke up, I thought, oh, no, because she was a very serious, traditional Christian woman. And I thought, this is going to be a real intrusion if I go say, oh, he's fine. He talked to me from the dead, and he wants to convey a message to you. But I had lunch with her, and by the time I had talked to her, she burst out laughing and said, you know, he finally came to me in a dream and was so annoyed because he'd been having trouble getting through to me. So I was really relieved at that point. But that's typical of these types of communications. So evidently, it's just tricky to get through to some people. And it seems to be that the deceased can almost see when we're dreaming. And they know they have an opening, and so there's a rush to try and get a communication through.
I was going to say, why did the deceased go to someone like you instead of trying to go to the person directly? Do they try that first?
Try that first. He had a best friend that they were both disabled, both struggling with catastrophic health challenges. And when his deteriorated, he got discouraged and committed suicide. But he really wanted to, he felt terrible. He really wanted to get a message through to her, but he couldn't for some reason. He just kept kind of bouncing off. And so he had a window to come barging into my dream. He literally ran into a scene in my dream, and then the rest of the dream kind of fell away. And that interrupted dream scene is pretty typical of the way these things start for some people.
How did you get going in this field, Julia?
Well, I was training to become a psychotherapist. I have a doctorate in psychology. And as part of graduate school, I started studying and working with dreams, and I found that the traditional approach to dream work was pretty clunky. It seemed to take a long time and be very theoretical and take people on long excursions. And for me, the dreams were just an open window. I had a kind of a knack for working with what's this dream trying to say? What is at the heart of it? And I was really surprised. A lot of my teachers started coming to me on the side and asking me for help with their dreams. And I realized I had a fluky kind of a talent for this. But I never expected it to become my life's work. It just kind of snowballed.
If it's snowballed to the point where, you know, you've now looked at 30,000 dream cases, how did they come to you?
Well, a number of them have come through the internet. I've been fortunate to have one of the first websites when the internet started back in probably 94 that was collecting dreams, and I have a really lengthy list of questions that I ask people, not only, hey, what was the dream, but were you stressed when you had it? What kind of work do you do? How old are you, male or female? Are you happy? Do you have lucid dreams? Do you believe in the paranormal? Do your family members have psychic experiences? I mean, I ask them everything from soup to nuts. And then, what do they think the dream meant? And that is where we really get some exciting information, because once people go through a lot of scrutiny about a dream, they come to say, you know, I think this is about the fact that this person at work is harassing me. Or I think this is about the fact that I just had a pregnancy terminated and I have really mixed feelings about it. So by the time you explore a dream and have a lot of questions and do some introspection, usually the dreamer has a very good idea of what the dream offers to them. Go ahead.
What kind of calls do you want from listeners when we go to them?
If anyone has had a recurring dream, that is usually a signal that you want to take a look at what that dream might be offering for you. So I'd encourage those calls. But any kind of dream question that people are curious about, I'd be happy to address.
With all the things that you've studied, Jillian, what do you find to be the most remarkable aspect of your studies?
I think the fact that our dreams are usually pulling us into the future. I had no idea when I started collecting dreams that we have certain types of dreams when we're children and as teenagers and as young adults and as middle-aged adults, and then in our later years, we actually have certain themes that are almost classical. These are the universal dreams, and they are developmental. They are pulling us forward into the next big thing in our lives. And I find this very exciting and encouraging. It's almost as if dreams are hardwired in to help us handle what's coming next.
What are the most common dream communications?
Do you mean of the paranormal dream communications or the messages in dreams that they have to offer?
Both.
Well, the most common paranormal dream is usually the precognitive dream. And that's the one that most people remember for a lifetime. If you've ever had a dream come true, you're not going to forget that. And often the warning dream is something that's reported very often. One woman had a dream that she hit a horse in the middle of the highway, and the horse flew through the windshield, and there were broken bones and shattered glass in her face, and it was horrific. Well, it was about a year later on a dark, rainy night that she was taking a shortcut through the country to go pick up her son at a friend's house when something about the sound of the windshield wipers, the rain on the windshield and the darkness and the limited vision gave her a deja vu in an instant of the dream she'd had. She put on her brakes as she came around a curve, and there was a horse standing in the middle of the road. But because she had that deja vu feeling, she had been able to stop the car, and the whole accident never happened. And I think that's exactly what our precognitive dreams are trying to achieve. They're offering us an advance warning.
When they offer these advance warnings, how much time do they give us?
Well, sometimes they give us a lot of time, but often it happens exactly the way it happened to that woman, that right in the moment of something, you have just a couple of seconds of reaction time that you wouldn't have had if you hadn't had that dream rehearsal, so to speak. But often that's all it takes to create a chain event to change the fact that the accident doesn't have to happen. Most of the cases that I hear about, the situation didn't come true as it had in the dream because they avoided the catastrophe.
All right, Jillian, when we come back, we'll take phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, Dr. Richard Bartlett joins us, The Physics of Miracles. That'll be a fascinating program. And also, don't forget, the first Sunday of every month, we will have our emerging artists, bumper music from people who just can't play it anyplace else. We're giving them a shot at 525 radio stations. First Sunday of every month. Information on that is at coasttocoastam.com. Jillian, what's the most incredible thing you've done in your dream state?
Oh, gosh. Well, I would say probably the dream that I was telling you about, the first after-death communication dream, where my young friend came and contacted me. And he also said, I asked him if he was all right on the other side because he had taken his own life. And he said, yes, but I have to take some classes because the lessons that I skipped on Earth, I have to take over here. And he said, I'm on lesson 11 and 23, which are trust and responsibility. So he seemed to have some precise information that I'm very interested in trying to find out. From other cases, what's going on the other side, from perhaps some stories from people who have crossed over.
Okay, let's go to San Francisco. Steve, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
Great, Steve.
let's see. When my grandmother died in 2009, I had several dreams about her coming to me, telling me she was okay. Mm-hmm. And then my mom passed away in late March this year, and she's come to me in several dreams in her apartment, wherever, and I keep telling her, Mom, you're dead. And she's like, no, I'm not. And I'm like, yes, you are, because I've got your ashes here with me. And she keeps being persistent about, no, she's not dead. Is there, I mean, I've told, I'm very sensitive about death and things that have happened in the past. And I've told people in the past, or people that I know would have happened in the past, about people that have died and how they've died and things like that. But I want to know, I mean, I think it's really weird that, you know, I've talked to my mom several times in my dreams, but every time that I've talked to her, I keep trying to tell her she's dead, and she keeps telling me she's not. And I keep saying, Mom, I've got your ashes. Is there something there that she's trying to tell me?
I don't think so. I think this may be a combination. This may be, it's pretty normal in the first couple of years after someone passes to have some fairly confusing dreams about them, in which they're not really dead, or they say they're not really dead, or they're trying to come back, and it's very muddled. So this may not be an actual visitation dream, Steve. I'm not sure. What you could do is just pray for her or try to send her positive wishes, whatever your belief system might be, and ask that someone on the other side might help her out in case this is a situation where she doesn't know she's dead or she's confused or she's in between. But my sense is that this is probably more a pattern of your own grieving process. For the first year or two, as I said, it's very typical to have dreams where, you know, the person comes back and says, what have you done with my false teeth? Or there are just some kind of confusing and oddly disturbing dreams. Those aren't always visitation dreams. Does that make sense to you?
It does, but I mean, it's like it's so real when she's here, and I mean, in my dreams, and it's like, you know, I'm trying to tell her, Mom, you are gone, and she's like, tell me, no, I'm not, and she, it's really funny because I put a lot of her stuff down in the basement when she moved out, I mean, when she died. Uh-huh. I was putting a bunch of stuff down to be taken away, and she's like, no, I'm down in the basement. I'm like, no, you're not down in the basement. I mean, it's really weird. And like I said, I'm very psychic, and it's really weird that, you know, my grandmother came to me and she told me that she was okay. She, in my dreams, she sent me pictures of trees, branches, and it was like angels. And she's like, angels, angels, angels. It's like, okay. And then she came to me one time and told me, I mean, we were sitting there talking, and she was in her bed, and we were talking about everything that happened from the time she had passed away until, you know, I had that dream. And then now it seems like this is what my mom and I are doing. And, you know, it's really weird. My mom and I were very close. We knew that, you know, my grandmother had passed away, and that, you know, little things here and there were my grandmother, you know.
I see. Well, here's what I'd suggest, Steve. You need to extend your positive wishes and your blessings to your mom. So every time you think about her, create a little affirmation or a little good wish for her or a little prayer for her, depending on your belief system. And every time you think of her, say that she can find her place on the other side, that she can go to where she belongs. She can be uplifted and blessed and inspired. And if she can't do it for herself, then you extend your blessing for her that you can do it on her behalf to some extent. And I believe, and I hear from so many people, that this actually has an effect, that our intentions and our blessings and our prayers, they go out and they hit the target, and they do uplift people wherever they are and whatever state they're in. So if you believe that this is what's going on, and I can hear in your voice that you do, then go ahead and take that on to help her and extend that for her. Even when you first wake up in the morning and the last thing before you go to sleep, just send that blessing out, and I think that will start to be helpful and get some get some movement for you and see if your dreams don't change as well.
You know, Jillian, probably one of the best movies I've ever seen about after-death dreams, Ghost. We just lost Patrick Swayze. But what a great story, wasn't it?
It was beautiful, yeah, and amazingly accurate. Sometimes Hollywood is very hokey, and they sensationalize what should be sacred, but sometimes they get it right, and it just gives you goosebumps, doesn't it?
We're going to Cuyahoga, Ohio. Jim, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Jim.
Hello, George.
Hi.
And also hello to your guest. There was some mention earlier of reoccurring dreams.
Yes.
Jillian, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, hi, Jillian.
Hi. Sorry.
I'm just a little nervous. Oh. Anyway, I've had a reoccurring dream that I've probably had 100 times. Now, that's reoccurring, isn't it?
Oh, very much so.
But now, it always seems to be a little different because I spent my entire life, I would say more than half my life, on the radio in a broadcast control room just like George is doing right now.
Oh, wow.
And I had this dream, and I'll put my money on it that George has had the same dream because I have this dream. And this never, ever, ever happened to me in the 26 years that I spent on the radio. But I have this dream where I'm in the control room and I'm live on the air, as I was more than half my life. And I hit the I hit the start button for the carts and nothing happens.
That's not a dream, Jim. That's a nightmare.
I have had this nightmare for years.
Yeah.
Now it always happens in a different control room. And sometimes it's like, it takes me back, because I'm one of these DJs that actually played records. I started my career in 1973. I was a DJ before they had CDs even.
Yeah.
When we had to queue up records. Now, of course, I was lucky enough to make it to I have some pretty big name call letters on my resume. But I still have this dream, and so do a lot of my friends that worked at some really big radio stations. They have the same dream. I made so few mistakes. I worked my way up from the little leagues to the medium leagues to the big leagues in California.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of my favorite pastimes is to listen to old air checks. And tonight I found an air check I haven't heard since 1982 with Ross Mitchell on it from Fresno.
I love it.
Ross Mitchell, I never heard this air check before. I found a suitcase tonight filled with cassette air checks that was in an old storage room. And I went, oh, my God. So I drove back down from Cleveland, was listening to old air check, and there's Ross. He was not only doing the news at that big 50,000-watt clear channel station in Fresno, he was doing commercials.
Jimmy, is his voice the same?
His voice sounds deeper to me now for some reason. I mean,
it used to be like this a long
yeah,
time.
Yeah, right.
And
so
then this
never really happened to me in real life, because you know at the big stations, here's what you do. You don't make it to the big stations if you make a lot of mistakes. And so at the big stations, if you do make a mistake, you're in a lot of trouble usually. So I was one of these disc jockeys that always had something ready to go in case something messed up. So whenever, you know, I mean, And also, what makes a good broadcaster is someone that can, like George. He's the best at when something goes wrong, he just takes over, and you would never know something went wrong.
Yes. Well.
And so not very much went wrong with me in real life. And I mean, I was in some big cities at some big stations. But in my dreams, it's a nightmare in the control room.
Well, this is typical, and this is an occupational peak stress dream. And it just comes from overload. And when your perfectionistic and professional personality collides with a situation where you're responsible for everything, but you don't have control over everything, then this is the peak stress dream. This is sort of like stress soup in your dreaming mind. And it's pretty common for every occupation. Firemen have dreams that they walk through in the bottom of their floor has burnt through and they didn't know it and they fall through. Police dream that they pull their gun and it won't work for them. They're every occupation. Doctors have a dream that they hit an artery and the patient bleeds to death. It's always something that is just overwhelming, and yet it has nothing to do with your performance in real life. It's just a what-if situation. And in fact, the people who are more inclined to dot every I and cross every T are more inclined to have these stress dreams because you actually put a little bit more level of pressure on yourself than maybe another person would. So it's not an indicator of performance at all. It's just a it is a barometer of stress sometimes.
Great. Thanks. Good advice, Jillian. Let's go to Irving, Texas. Valencia. Go ahead, Valencia.
Hi. Hi. It's nice to talk to you all. I have a dream every once in a while from a friend of mine's mother who passed away.
Oh, sure.
And the day she passed away, prior to her passing away, I was hit with this thought. I wonder if she's dead.
Really?
Yeah, and I thought to myself, well, you know, I guess my mom or dad would have told me. And what was really strange was I was in Georgia and, you know, on vacation. And so when I came back, I contacted that Saturday, I was at my mom's house, and she said, I need you to sit down. And she handed me the newspaper.
Oh.
And there it was, you know, her obituary.
Well, tell me about the dream. What is she trying?
And so when she comes to me in her dream, in my dreams, she's usually giving me advice that I am supposed to pass on to her son.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's really strange. I've mentioned it to him, and, you know, it seems that he's not very receptive to it. And, you know, he claimed that, you know, that I guess at some point, I guess as he was growing older, he's a doctor, and, you know, and in his life, he said she was overbearing, you know, she was always wanting him to settle down,
oh,
you know, get married, and,
yeah,
you know, and he was trying to, he did further studies overseas when his wife was pregnant, and it was like she was saying, you know, well, you really need to be at home. I don't know why you still keep, you know, going to school or studying. And
well, let's get some advice here. We're almost out of time.
So I don't know what to tell. I mean, do I still try to tell him of what's going on? I mean, that you know,
I think,
the advice that she's giving
I think you're doing just the right thing, Valencia, to make an attempt to extend the message from her, but don't push it if he's not receptive. That's all you can reasonably do. It takes a certain amount of courage and fortitude to try and tell somebody this if you know that they're not open to it. But just do your best for the person who's on the other side. And if the person who's here isn't willing or interested or open, if their heart's not open, there's not much you can do. So don't put pressure on yourself. You've done what you can to pass on the messages, and if he's not open to it, just let it go.
Let's go to Roosevelt, Utah. Hello, Ann, first-time caller. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, George, doctor.
Hi.
I have a more of a statement or a story.
Okay.
To tell you. When I pulled up your website tonight, I seen an individual on there. Have you dreamed of this man?
Right. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, everybody.
Well, let me tell you my story real quick.
Okay.
A few years ago, I was in a very, very deep meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And this man popped into my meditation. And at first I thought, oh, this is really cool, you know? I mean, what's going on here? All of a sudden, he opened his mouth and smiled, and he had the most horrible, pointy, rotten teeth that just scared me to death.
Oh, my.
Like a clown.
And so what my fear is here, I mean, I read the website. Have you seen this man, the whole website that's on your site? And people are thinking that he may be like a spirit from God. He's not. He's an evil something. I think he's a person that's living on this earth. I wanted to pass that on to any of your listeners, that just to be very careful.
And apparently thousands of people are seeing this guy in their dreams.
I know. And see, I'm thinking maybe he perfected his abilities or something, you know, I just shut him off, you know, and got rid of him in a hurry.
Well, that's
only got
idea.
A minute ago. Well, who is this guy, Jillian?
I don't know who he is, but I don't get a good vibration from him either. I was looking at the picture earlier, and he certainly doesn't look like a divine being to me or anything that's sort of on the upper end of the evolutionary scale. So I think he's an example of someone you probably might want to get rid of or cast him out of your dreams. And have
why would so many people be dreaming of him?
You know, it's not unusual for a widespread phenomenon to occur through our dreams, that many, many people will have a similar type of dream at the same time. And I don't know exactly how that comes through or why, but I get it because I'll get thousands of dreams from around the world in the same week, and people from all over the world will be dreaming of eating ground glass that week.
Jeez.
Or some strange and horrific image will be in our dreams. So we really are more connected than we imagine.
Give us your website.
It is lifetreks.com. That's LIFETREKS. I have a special email account, adcdreams@gmail.com. If anyone has an after-death communication dream they'd like to share with me for my research, I'd really be indebted to them. And the book about this research is called The Complete Dream Book, and it's available on Amazon as well.
Great. Thanks, Jillian. I appreciate you being part of the program. For Dan Galante, Jesse Angelo, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe.